Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this wonderful learning opportunity. Rabbi Liebtag is no stranger to our community. He's a dear friend of our community, of my family, and it's always an honor to welcome him back as one of the truly outstanding educators in the Torah world today. Educating, using, and taking advantage of every medium possible, from the classroom to audio to revolutionizing the learning world through the online learning, having founded the Virtual Beis Medrash, and the countless people who learn from Rabbi Liebtag's insights into the Parsha each and every week. I mentioned on Shabbos, Rabbi Liebtag, when I announced that you were coming, that people print out, more talis bags are filled with Rabbi Liebtag's Parsha insights. We as rabbis have a challenge, first of all, finding our own Divrei Torah, but competing during the drasha with people reading yours. So for that, I'm not sure we're grateful. But on the whole, the Torah community is extraordinarily grateful for the incredible Torah learning that we have. I want to express our gratitude to Dr. Harold and Lori Landa for their generous sponsorship of this evening. They sponsor this learning in memory of our beloved Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda, an outstanding Talmud Chacham in his own right, who is sorely missed for his being a role model, for his being a friend, but most of all for the Torah that he taught in our community on a daily basis. We hope that the Rabbi Liebtag's Torah this evening serves Le'iloi Nishmaso to elevate his soul. Without any further ado, please rise and join me in welcoming Rabbi Liebtag.
I'd like to begin with a question. Election Day was last week? Election Day? In America. Election Day was last week. But we can still vote. Okay? If someone asks you the question, okay, the commandment of Pru Arvu, which is our title. If they would ask you, is it a commandment? What would you answer? Yes. And how early in the Bible is that commandment? Right up front, where before we fall asleep. Now, but if the next question was, is this a commandment for all mankind or just the Jewish people? Is the question clear? Second question, it's definitely a commandment. Who is being commanded? Just the Jewish people or all mankind? Ready to vote? Only voting, okay? Quiet vote, like one vote per person. Who would vote it's for all mankind? Okay. And who would vote, right, look, I'm saying, vote again? So everyone look around. Okay, see? Usually people first look around before they vote. Okay. And who would say it's only for the Jewish people? Look around. Okay, so who's winning? It's about 70-30 for all mankind. Okay, now, someone who said it was for all mankind, can you help me with, in 10 seconds or less, explain why it's for all mankind? What? Oh, perfect. It was given to, in Parsha Bereshit, to Adam HaRishon, and there is no Jewish people yet. How could you possibly think that it's only for the Jewish people if it was given for Adam HaRishon? That makes like perfect sense. Okay, so who? I want to volunteer for the 30% who said it's only for the Jewish people. Now you're afraid to say, oh, you're really? Yeah? Go ahead. Yeah, why? Yeah, why is it only for us?
We were only two of us at that time.
But we weren't Jewish yet. But I'm saying, is the commandment for all generations? Is it just for the Jewish people? Okay. Okay. What do you want to say?
They're only seven.
Oh, perfect. That's called deductive reasoning. This is good. Yeah. We know there's only seven Noahide laws. Last count? You gotta do seven. And we know if you memorize them, you might remember that one of them is not Pur Avu. So if it's not one of the seven Noahide laws, and it is a law, it's gotta be for us. That's good deductive reasoning. Okay? Anyone else have another reason why it's not only for us?
Yeah.
What? Oh, it's your share.
Any other nishkeis after?
Oh, okay. You study the Talmud, okay? You're a Talmudist. The goal this year tonight, let me explain what Harold is saying. According to the Talmud, in the Masechet Sanhedrin, it's easy to remember. It's Daf Mumchet, like Noach. We're going to get to Noach soon. In the discussion of these laws, of the seven Noachai laws, we're told that Pur Avu is only for the Jewish people and not for all mankind. But the reasoning is really strange. It's too complicated to go into.
Harold Davey one day will explain it to you. It's really complicated, almost backward logic, almost like that deductive reasoning. But most of the people who voted that it's only for the Jewish people is because the Gemara says so. You follow? Logically, it makes no sense at all. Usually, the people who, when you vote, it depends how many Talmudists, how many, because anyone who studies the Talmud knows it's only for the Jewish people. Anyone with common sense says it's for all mankind. Just read the Bible. No. The goal of the shiur today is to try to share with you my understanding of how the rabbis reach conclusions which sound at first glance so strange. How can the rabbis read Chumash, where God's speaking to man, and claim God's speaking to the Jewish people? The goal I want to achieve is to show you how the Bible is a book to study, not a book to read. I'll explain that again. There's books like Shulchan Aruch, Jewish law book. It's written to read. You read, here's the answer. When you total different, when you buy a washing machine, you get instruction book. The person who wrote it wants you to read the instructions, not to study them. You follow and figure out what he really mean. That's what's called a technical writer. You need to be as clear as possible. When you read the Bible, there's a lot of passages which are confusing and sometimes contradictory and unclear what we want. What I want to show you, that style of writing is intentional, and it's through the study of Chumash that the rabbis reach their conclusions about Jewish law. And that's why we live our lives by Shulchan Aruch. We lead our lives by prophecy. You follow? Chumash is a book that teaches how to lead our life. Shulchan Aruch, how to live our life. Now, the principles, the rabbis, when they study the Bible, learn from them principles, and then they apply them to every generation, and that's called Torah Shabbat Peh. I want to show you how they trace, how they read Chumash. Okay? And our first source would be nice and simple. Actually, before then, don't look yet. One other thing. Someone told me that, or you told me, that Pur Vu was told to Adam HaRishon?
Yeah.
Did anyone ever get that commandment before Adam HaRishon? Sounds impossible, right? Was anyone ever commanded Pur Vu before Adam? Oh, very good. And day five, the fish and the fowl got that commandment. Didn't they? Did they keep it? They're pretty good at it. They're pretty good. You have guppies, they're great. They're doing really good. Because they're commanded? No. No. If you remember your Chumash, does God command them to have children? What word comes first? It doesn't say, he doesn't command them, pruvu. What does he say? It's a blessing. Now, what's the difference between a blessing and a commandment? We'll have to see. But it's, there it says, vayvarechotam, God blesses them and told them, pruvu. And the same thing happens with man. You know who gets pruvu before the fish and the fowl? Now you're totally confused. It was confusing enough, pruvu before man. So, but you're right, it says fish and fowl. Who got pruvu before them? You're stumped. Oh, very good. He's on the ball. Okay. The trees. How did God make the trees? She knows her Hebrew. So listen, when God says the trees, what's he say? Totzi ha'aretz deshe. Remember? Esev mazriya zera. It's pri or sepri. The nature of life is every living thing by definition dies, but every living thing in all of nature, it also has the ability to reproduce itself. So the species can be eternal, but the individual, they're what's called up to 120. And that's the nature of nature, isn't it? That's the way God made nature, that every living thing is able to reproduce itself. That's why it's still around. But every living thing, sooner or later, dies, but has the ability to reproduce. Plants, they do it their way. Remember the birds, the bees, you learn that. I don't have to give a class in biology. No. But I want to give a class in Chumash. And for some reason, that's a big topic on day three when God makes vegetation, on day five when he begins the animal kingdom, and on day six when he creates man. Got that? Yeah. The verse the rabbis quote that it's a commandment is not from chapter 1 in Bereshit. Because in chapter 1 in Bereshit, it is a blessing. When the rabbis discuss the commandment, it's from Parshat Noach, and I want to explain why. God created, and he was very upset with his creation. You remember that story. And he takes his entire creation they worked so hard on, and he throws the whole thing back in the mikvah. What story is that? Noah. And I mentioned the mikvah on purpose, because Pretty much that's what mikveh is about. We're starting over again. We came out of Egypt, remember we go through a mikveh? We enter the land of Israel, Sefer Yeshua. Going through water, not only in our religion, ask your our sister religions. Going through water is a big thing. There's something very deep there. That was supposed to be a pun. In fact, I think there was water before creation, wasn't there? Remember the first pasuk? B'mayim, ruach elim rachefet apneimayim. It's something very deep. Now, the verse the rabbis learn from is after the flood. The flood is over. Noah comes out of the ark. And God makes a promise, never again. Remember that? After God promises never again, after he smells the korban, he has a little chat with Noah and his sons. And we're going to read that. And what we're going to find is the story after creation is very, the end of creation is very similar to after the flood. Just like in creation, all the waters recede and then the land comes up. The waters recede by the flood and comes up. And God, the animals begin to populate the land again, and man is given commandments. Just like on day 6, man was commanded to Urvu, we have a very similar thing here. Now, let's take a look at the first source. And we're going to read chapter 9 in Sefer Bereshit. And we're going to try and follow common sense. You can follow in the English, I'll read the Hebrew. Remember again, the flood is over. Noah brought his sacrifices. God smelled the sacrifice and says, I'm never going to do this again. We're going to keep to nature now. And now, he summons Noah and his sons and has something to tell them. Pasuk Aleph. Vayvarech Elohim et Noach ve'et banav, vayomer lahem, pu urvu imulu et ha'aretz. Who's God talking to? It says so, you can't miss that. He's talking to Noah and his sons. And who's commanded pu urvu? Noach and his sons. And then umarachem v'chitchem yaukochai et ha'aretz, very similar. You can exert your dominion over other living things. They'll be afraid of you, even though you're smaller. Animals will fear you. And basically, you're the master of everything down below, under the sky. You're the master. Plus at Gimel, we finally gain something for the flood. What does God tell us? Kol remes ashiru chai, lachem yalokla, ki yarek esed natate lachem etakol. Before the flood, the first creation, man was a veggie. Remember? You can have bari pri adama and bari pri ha'etz. And that was it. After the flood, he can eat meat again. I mean, eat for the first time. Is that good or bad? Ask your local. It depends who you ask. It depends how good the meat is. Now, but because it's okay to eat meat now, and it's really interesting, the word Yerek Esev was unique to animal food in the story of creation. But now that it's okay to eat an animal, God says, back it up a little bit. You can eat an animal like other animals eat animals, but before you eat an animal, what do you need to do? Don't eat it alive. What do we call that law? Eder Minachai. Who's heard of the law of Eder Minachai? Is it on the seven? Who said the seven? It's one of the seven, isn't it? It's a famous one. Which means you can eat animals, but you can't eat them alive. So what do you have to do first? You have to kill them first. Now it's okay to kill an animal to eat it. I can extend that logic and do what? I can kill an animal. Who else can I kill? Another human being. Especially if he has a different colored skin. If I don't agree with his political opinions. If he believes in a different God. If he voted left wing. You follow? I can vote. As long as I can kill an animal, why can't I kill another human being? So what does God say? That doesn't mean you can kill another human being. And finally, in Pasuk Vav, Shofech Dam Ha'adam Ba'adam Damo Yishofech. Right? Ki v'tzelem Elohim Asat Adam. God made man in his image. And if you kill another human being, it's an offense against God. Because man is different than animal. Man is not part of the animal kingdom. Man has to realize he's different than the animal kingdom. We're good? Is that one of the seven Noahai laws?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, the rabbis learn this section is the seven Noahai laws. The other ones you have to read between the lines. But this is the main section of the seven Noahai laws. Now, for some reason, it seems that Noah and his sons were hard of hearing. Why? Because look at Pasuk Zion. Vatem, who's Vatem? Noah had his sons. Plural, what's that mean? And multiply. Shirtsuba aretz, like swarm more than that, like, you know, have lots of kids. Okay. Urvuba, and multiply. Why did I say that they must have been hard of hearing? Why repeat it? But that closes the Sefer Noachai laws. Then God's going to make a treaty called Brit. Then we're going to follow with the Rainbow Covenant. The entire section of the Sefer Noachai laws, which is identified, where God is talking to Noach and his sons, where we have all the other Sefer Noachai laws, begins with Plur Vuh and ends with Plur Vuh. It's an envelope structure. I was only joking. They're not hard of hearing. I hope you realize I was joking. Okay. It's not because they're hard of hearing. That's how Chumash often presents sets of laws in a chiasm. It's like in an envelope structure. It begins Puruvu, ends with Puruvu, and everything in between. Now, that only makes our question much more difficult. Not only does God speaking to before he picks Avraham Avinu, he's speaking to mankind, it's exactly this section which is the seven Noahai laws. And the rabbis have the audacity to say that God isn't talking to Noah, but he's talking to us. And let me share with you how they read this pasuk. Okay? The verse in the Masechet Sanhedrin that they learn the commandment from, that the rabbis, is not from pasuk Aleph, not from verse 1, because that's a blessing. They learn it from verse 7. Because that's already in command form. And when they read this pasuk, they read it midrashically, and they say, Vatem Purvu, who's Vatem? You. You what? You standing in Har Sinai. You, the reader of Chumash. God finished talking to Noach in Pasuk Vav. Again, it's a midrashic reading, but it's right on the mark. The way they're reading it is that Vatem Purvu is not God talking to Noach and his sons, but rather, you, the reader of Chumash, you Purvu, Shirtsuba Aretz, Urvuba. Understand? Now, that's a strange reading, isn't it? But the rabbis know something. Because they read all of Chumash. And this explains a very complicated pasuk, which is hard to translate. Remember the book of Shemot? How does it begin? These are the list of the names of Bnei Yisrael. And they go down to Egypt. And it's the first Aliyah, so you're probably familiar. Vayamat Yosef v'kol achav v'kol hador ahu. Yosef and the whole generation died. Someone want to finish it for me? Uvnei Yisrael. Oh, I want to hear it quiet. Uvnei Yisrael. Paru. Vayishritzu. Vatimalei ha'aretz otam. Now you're smiling. Why that word Vayishritzu? Where's that coming from? The rabbis are up to something, aren't they? Is there anything else similar between the beginning of Shemot and the beginning of Bereshit? Is someone building Levenim in Chomer? Chomer Levenim? Yeah. Is there a Teva here and a Teva there? 40 days and 40. There's so many. Chumash is up to something. You follow? Because Chumash is a book to study, not to read. Chumash is setting us up for Har Sinai. And it's setting the stage to understand what's special about Har Sinai. We'll get to that very soon. Now, what I'm trying to show you is when the rabbis are reading this set of laws, they're claiming that this Pasuk Zion, at least midrashically, is talking to the Jewish people, and has a very nice support from the beginning of Shemot. But there has to be more logic to it than that.
But what do they do with the Vayomer Lahav in the first Pasuk? Hashem is telling God.
But it's part of a blessing. Let me answer your question by getting to one of my first conclusions. There's a difference between a blessing and a commandment. What does it mean, a blessing? The entire creation is blessed. Remember how creation ends on the seventh day? What does God bless? Everything he made, because it was very good. He gave himself straight A's. Except maybe Monday. But every day was good. And the whole thing was tov v'od. He did a good job. Man messed up. Now, what does it mean it's a blessing? The recognition that creation is an act of God, and from God, is something man has to appreciate. The need to appreciate God's creation, to appreciate that God gave you the ability to have children, and God gave you the ability to eat, and to live your life, and God made nature, that requires appreciation by man, and should lead him to good behavior. There's a basic assumption in Chumash, that if you believe in God, we call it ethical monotheism, you'll act like a good person. In fact, that almost defines the belief in God. If you look at Sefer Bereshit, believing in God is something behavioral and not intellectual. I'll give you an example. Abraham Avinu, we just read about it. He goes to Avimelech, and Avimelech likes Sarah, remember? A little X-rated the story, but you're an adult crowd. And remember, he takes her. That night, God comes to Pharaoh, God comes to Avimelech, and what's he tell him? Don't touch that lady, because she's not yours. Avimelech gets up in the morning, and who does he yell at? What are you messing with? Why didn't you tell me? What does Avram answer back? What was I afraid of? I was afraid that there's no Yirat Elohim. Now, Avram doesn't expect him to be a firm Jew, but he expects to have a moral and just society. A society where you'll kill a husband to take his wife, or just take someone's wife, without any respect for other people, there's no Yirat Elohim. Yirat Elohim is I call it a pintel goy, if you know what that means. I can't explain if you understand it. You got it. Yeah. A pintel yid says you have to like camp. You follow? There's a pintel. You have to do the basic Jewish things. A pintel goy, you have to be a good person. No. I'll give you another example about Yirat Elohim. Yosef is doing everything to hide his identity that he's Jewish. Correct? He's doing a cover-up. Okay? He accuses his brothers as spies. He puts them all in jail and says, you're all in jail until one of you goes back and brings Binyamin. And they're waiting 3 days and no one volunteers. You remember that story? Parshat Miketz. After 3 days, what does Yosef say? I'm going to be a nice guy. And instead of you all staying in jail, you know what? Only one stay in jail. The rest of you go home, take care of your family. And how does he preface his words? Et Elohim ani yared. I'm a God-fearing person, therefore I'm going to be nice and kind and ethical. Got it? As he's disguising his own Judaism, his own member of the family, what's that prove? Yirat Elohim is ethical behavior. It has nothing to do with Judaism, it has to do with mankind. Remember the midwives? Just happened to have non-Jewish names, but maybe they were. Remember Shifra and Puah? Whatever they were. Paro commands them to throw the babies into the river. Someone with an ethical heart couldn't do that. And what's it say? Batirena hamyadot et Elohim. Got my point? Now, there's a nation later on, nomadic people, who just take advantage of unprotected travelers traveling through the desert in open areas, and they attack them and steal from them because they're unprotected. What's that nation called? Amalek. And when we need to remember what they were, how do they describe? V'lo yarei Elokim. Because that's the exact opposite of moral behavior. Taking advantage of someone unprotected. And we have to remember that, don't we? Not to remember to kill them, remember not to act the way they did. All the memories. Remember, we redeem our history. We remember what people did to us, so we don't do that to others. Remember what God did to Miriam, not to speak Lashon Hara. Remember how they mistreated us in Egypt, so we don't mistreat others. Got the idea? Now. Therefore, what I'm trying to show you is that when God is telling us about His creation, we have to remember, God's telling us it's a blessing from God, the creation of nature. Man has to appreciate that, and God expects man to be good. After the first creation, man went on a bad path, and God says, I'm going to start over again. He brings the flood. After the flood, what does God decide to do? I'm never going to start over again. Now what can He do if man goes bad? If God can't start over again, what can He do when mankind goes bad? What? He can punish selectively. But how's it going to get better? He can't start over again. Well, the next story, man goes bad, they build that tower. And God's upset. He scatters them. He doesn't kill them, though. And what happens afterwards? God's going to pick a nation. And what's that nation going to do for God? That nation has to be a light to other nations. God wants one nation that's going to bring an example of what it means to be a God-fearing people, with the hope that they'll set a model for other nations to learn from. It's called the Takeno Lama Machut Shaddai. It's all through davening. It's what Isaiah calls to be like to other nations. Part of God's choice of the Jewish people is in light of the flood. Now, right after this flood, Pul Urvu, God makes a treaty with His creation, with Noah, on behalf of all creation. And what do we call that covenant? It's called the Rainbow Covenant, Brit Keshet. Have you heard of it? What does God promise to do? Look in Pasuk Chet. God tells Noah, I'm going to make my covenant with you. Pay attention to Pasuk Yud Aleph. God says, I'm going to make a covenant with you. No more floods. In the context of beforehand, it means no more recreation. No more reset button. I can punish selectively, but not going to start over again. And as a reminder, what does God do? I'm going to put a reminder in the sky. And what will be the reminder? The rainbow. God's name here is Elohim. Brit between God, Beni Ubein. And we're going to find the exact same wording in a Brit he makes later with the Jewish people. Better known as a Bris. No, not, but we'll get to Brit Sinai soon. Bris Mila. You've been to a Bris, right? Now, ask someone in Hebrew, one second, what does Bris mean? And they'll tell you circumcision. Won't they? You're going to a bris. No one says, I'm going to a covenant, you're saying. I'm going to bagels and lox. But they're going to a circumcision. Right? Did you have a bris? That means, did you have circumcision, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's not what the word means, but that's the context. Yeah, you were going to ask something?
Yes. Doesn't God say that he won't destroy the world by a flood?
Yeah.
And what, does that mean that he might destroy it by
So we have to put together two stories. In this covenant, he says not by a flood. When God smelled the korbanot that Noah offered afterwards, he made a promise, I'm not going to change nature again. He makes a promise twice. The first time is about not going to start over at all. And then he makes it official with this covenant, and he brings an example. It's called plot and cloud. You know, I bring an example, but it means everything. That's why it's how it's understood.
Yes.
Yeah. Remember Isaiah? We read the Haftarah for Noah. Kimi Noach Zotni. God makes an analogy, a beautiful one. Isaiah, Yishayel, says, just like God promises, I'm not going to start creation over again, using a bad word, God is basically stuck with his creation. He puts himself in a corner. God says, I created, I'm sort of deciding that I can't do that again. And he makes a covenant about it. Just like that's unbreakable, so too is covenant with the Jewish people. That was Haftarah for Noah. Or what I like to call, God decides that his relationship with the Jewish people is going to be a Catholic marriage. There's no possibility of divorce. And that's exactly our argument with Christianity. Because what do they hold? They hold that we had a covenant and it was broken. The Catholics hold that it was a Protestant marriage. Now, it's more than that though. There must be some connection between God's covenant with the rainbow, with all mankind, not to start over again, and his covenant with Abraham Avinu. Because when you look at it, and that will be our next source, they're almost identical. Take a look at them. Flip the page over to source C. Before we read the whole thing, just look at Pasuk Zion. And tell me if it looks familiar. V'akimoti et briti b'ni u'b'necha, u'b'n zarecha acharecha, v'dortam l'brit olam, l'ot l'cha l'olim, u'zarecha acharecha. See Pasuk Zion? Without even translating it, flip over and look again at Pasuk Yud Aleph beforehand. You see almost the exact same wording? Vakimoti et briti itchem. Now, both britot have this phrase Vakimoti et briti. I'm establishing a covenant. Both of them are beni ubein. Both of them have an ot brit. The rainbow is a reminder of the covenant. Isn't it? In the circumcision covenant, what is circumcision? The covenant or the reminder? Listen to the Moel next time you start a bris. How does he begin? Ot Brit Kodesh. Or probably says Ois Brit Kodesh. Remember? What he's about to do is a reminder of the covenant, not the covenant. Ever wonder what is the covenant and a bris? There has to be a covenant there. How do we know? Because we call it a bris.
Yeah.
But circumcision is a reminder of the covenant. But what's the covenant? It's a good question. And it's so simple. The answer is Pasuk Zion. Take a look now. And you tell me the answer. Read Pasuk Zion. That has to define the Brit because of the parallel. Okay? I want you to figure out on your own to make sure everyone's got the same answer.
Okay.
What has to be the Brit is I'm going to be your God, I'm going to be your boss, and the corollary, you'll be my people. Remember the fourth cup? That's our Sinai. The covenant of the Bible is God chooses us to be his nation to work for him. That's what Shema is about. Remember on Yom Kippur, Anu Amecha, Ata Eloheinu, and then we sing it 12 different ways. We're your sheep, you're our shepherd, you're our boyfriend, you're our girlfriend, you follow? You're our master, we're your servant. We have all these different analogies. Now, we need a reminder that we're God's people. And circumcision is a reminder. Now, it's a strange one, isn't it? I want to try to understand where that's coming from. Okay? But that would be the reminder. But the main thing now is the wording of Brit Milah, which is the beginning of God's covenant with the Jewish people. God begins the nation here. It's very similar to the wording of the flood, which means they're connected. In fact, if we had time, I would show you. You can do it for homework. When Elohim speaks to Noah in chapter 9 and makes his covenant, that's the last time Elohim speaks to anybody until chapter 17 with the circumcision covenant. Every other time, God's name is Yud Kei Vav Kei, the God of history. Telling Avram to move, going down to Egypt, the whole. The God of history is Yud Kei Vav Kei. The God of nature is always Elohim. God finishes his creation. Remember, the seven-day creation with God's name Elohim. With that name, he promises to recreate and not to start over again after the flood. And then he makes a covenant with Avram Avinu, with the same name. And the first time Elohim speaks to Avram Avinu is exactly the same wording as the after the flood covenant, which was recreation. And surprise, surprise, what day do we do Milah? On day 8, because it's continuing the 7 days of creation. You follow the 8th day now? Okay. Now I want to get to the key point of this year, because I might have lost you. Okay. What I want to explain is as follows. I want to give a different reason why we're obligated to have children. What I want to suggest is, the reason that the Jewish people are obligated to have children is not because it says, Purvu. We're obligated to have children because it makes sense. And I want to show you there's a lot of mitzvot that we're obligated because it makes sense, and then we go looking for a pasuk. I'll explain that again. What I'm going to do, we're going to see there's a lot of things that rabbis count as a commandment, and they support it with a verse from the Bible, but what I want to suggest is they're not saying that that is the reason why it's a commandment. It's not because of the verse it's a commandment. It's a commandment because it makes sense. It has to be a commandment. And then they have to find a pasuk, it's called an asmachta, to sort of attach it to. But that's just an add-on, sort of like to make it cute. But the reason is basic. I'll give you an example. Are we obligated to pray? Are we, as a Jewish people, are we obligated to pray to God? We spend a lot of money, time in shul, if we're not. Of course we're obligated. There's argument every day, 3 times a day, only when you're in trouble, but everyone agrees they're obligated to pray. How can that be? Because if you believe in God, you have to pray. Because if you don't turn to God when you're in trouble, it shows you don't believe in Him. Okay. Now we need a pasuk. You follow? And everyone brings another one. The fact that every commentator agrees we have to pray, Rambam, Rambam, and everyone quotes a different pasuk and starts doing somersaults to prove it. What's that show you? Everyone agrees you have to pray, not because of the verse, because it makes sense. No, go find a pasuk. Got it? And the pasuk they find are beautiful. I want to show you the same thing here. And I want to give you a very logical reason why we have to have children. At Har Sinai, which is the continuation of a Brit Milah. Remember, what was the Brit of Brit Milah? What was the covenant? Liot lachal Elohim. I'm your God, I'm your boss, you're my people. Why did God take us out of Egypt? You mentioned it twice today. Ani Hashem Elokechem, Asher Tzeitet Cheretz Mitzrayim. That's not that. We don't need to remember that He took us out. We need to remember why He took us out. He took us out to be our God. And that experience going through Egypt is going to shape our character. And will affect many laws we get at Har Sinai. We don't do to others what they did to us. Because we need to suffer to appreciate what suffering's about. When we become a nation, we can't do that to others. God wants us to be a nation. For how long? It's a Catholic marriage forever. And therefore, we at Har Sinai took upon ourselves to be God's people forever. God planted the seeds of that nation in Sefer Bereshit. It began with Avram Avinu, with the circumcision covenant. That's when he changes his name, because he has to be an Avraham Goyim, which means like a mentor to other nations. And that filtering process begins till we get to Yaakov. We change his name to Israel, remember? And then all the kids are chosen, but we're not a nation yet. To become a nation, we have to go through slavery in Egypt. In Egypt, we Paru vayirbuve. Remember we said that pasuk before. We multiply. We become a nation. We're not God's nation yet because we have a different boss. God redeems us from slavery, takes us to the desert, and makes a proposal. Do you want to be a mamlechet konei v'goy kadosh? What did we answer? Naseh v'nishma. And what's the first commandment? The first statement? I'm your boss. And that's why I took you out of Egypt. Ani Hashem Elokeichem is God's side of Liot Lachan Elohim. I took you out of Egypt to be your boss, and that's why I took you out. And you can't work for anybody else. Now, if that's the case, if we took upon ourselves to be God's people forever, and we're committed to that, what does that imply?
We have to have children.
In order to be eternal, you can't live forever. What do you have to do? You have, not because it's a blessing, you follow? Because part of being Jewish means I'm obligated to bring up the next generation. Look how much money we put into that. Without realizing, we are so dedicated to the next generation because that's central to being Jewish. Part of being Jewish, Rav Amital, Allah B'Shav used to say, he would love to see the last generation because every generation, I'm doing it for my kids. It's not for us, it's for my kids. We're worried so much about the next one, we never worry about ourselves. We put more... But we're dedicated to that, to an extreme. That's something ingrained in our nature because we took upon ourselves to be God's nation forever. Now, is it enough to have children? It's not enough to have children. What else do you have to do?
Train.
You have to train. You have to teach them Torah. That's what Rabbi Tzviuda was talking about. That was dedicated his life to that, to teaching Torah and passing that down to the next generation. The idea that being Jewish is a commitment, not just that you have to be Jewish, you're committed to bring up the next generation and to educate them, okay? That's central to Judaism. And therefore, it's implicit in Har Sinai, when we take upon ourselves to be God's people forever, that of course you have to have children. You have to, not because you want to. You have to. It's more than a blessing. For mankind, having children is a blessing, the recognition that there's a God. For the Jewish people, it's a commandment. Because that's part of our commitment at Har Sinai. Understand that point? That's key. Now I have to find a pasuk. That's a technical thing. The concept, I think, is clear. Now, the idea of being a nation serving God began where? It's not just at Har Sinai. Where do we plant the seeds of that idea of being God's nation? By Avraham Avinu. What was that Brit called? No. Brit Milah. We're talking Shem Elohim now. No. That's there's two covenants God makes with Avraham Avinu. The God of history, Yudke Vavke, okay? And the God of nature, Elohim. I'm talking about God's name Elohim, making the brief we just read. God's name is Elohim. He makes, I'm going to be your God, you'll be my people. And the reminder is going to be, what's going to be the old brief? Before Avraham can have children, God has to change his name and make circumcision covenant.
Yeah.
Okay. And what does Avraham have to do now? He has to begin that nation. And he has to remember, he has to pass that tradition to those kids who have, and they to their next. And what's going to be our reminder that we have to have children to bring them up? Doesn't it make perfect sense now? Why circumcision is the old breed? Got it? How about I don't have to explain it? How about
the threat of destroying the Jewish people after the area?
There's a parallel. I'll explain your question. Your question was better than you thought. I'll explain what I mean. The question was, God threatens to destroy us after the sin of the golden calf, which sounds like it's up for grabs, the covenant, isn't it? Moshe Rabbeinu negotiates, and then we have a new covenant. Now, when Moshe davens to God, what does God tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Allow me to destroy everybody and make you the nation. God didn't say I'm going to destroy you altogether. I want to start again from Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe was matzachin in God's eyes, and therefore he listened to his prayer. Do you know anyone else who was matzachin in God's eyes, who found favor in God's eyes, who God gave him the choice, let me wipe out everybody and make you the only one? Who was saved by a teva? Don't you see the parallel? With 40 days and 40 nights? Chumash is up to something, right? Got it? Now, but it's different. Moshe davens. Yeah, you touched on a big topic. You realize? But we're not. You understand that answers it? God doesn't say, I'm going to wipe you out all together. I'm going to start from the little, remember that little tree with the little sapling? It's a hook. The tree's cut up, but a little sapling is still there. It's still alive. That we got told. Moshe says, no, I don't want that either. I want you to accept everybody. And you have to be a little more forgiving. And then we have a new covenant. A covenant after the event, remember? Which would be permanent. Because that doesn't break it. The first one breaks. The second one can break. Got it? That's why that question needs a whole shir to do it, but that's right on the mark. Now, let me review, because that was the key point of the shir. I hope you remember. My key point is, if you follow the concept of God entering a covenant with the nation to be his people forever, to represent him forever, which is the essence of Har Sinai, where the seed of that began with God's covenant with Avraham Avinu. Remember, when God chose Avraham Avinu, what's the first thing he tells him? Why am I sending you on this journey? V'eschel goy gadol. I'm going to make you a great nation. That's not reward, that's purpose. God says, begin the journey. It should be followed. What's the purpose of your journey? I want to start a nation. You're a startup nation. And you have to have children. And I'll help you have children. But you have to understand why you're chosen. And then that becomes official at Har Sinai. But Am Yisrael now is committed to be God's people forever. Therefore, part of being Jewish is you have to have children. If God gives you the blessing to be able to do that. Or you can help other people have. And you have to educate those children. Or help other people educate those children. Got the idea? And that becomes, in Jewish history, that's half of our existence. It's exactly that. Now that it makes sense that it's a commandment, okay? Now what do I need? Now we need a pasuk. Yeah. Why do I need a pasuk? Because they have to have a pasuk. It's a commandment. You understand how the rabbis are working? That's what I'm trying to show you. I want to show you how the rabbis think. How they study the Bible. And they're so sharp. Now, I need a verse, not as a reason why I'm obligated, as a nice reminder that we're obligated. Now, it says approval a lot of times. But which one is in command form more than all the other ones? It doesn't begin with Vayvarech. The one we just read, Vatem Purvu, Pasuk Zayin. Which one can I read midrashically? Vatem is who? You, because God already told him in Pasuk Aleph. Remember I told you the hard of hearing? That little joke? That's another support. It can't be Noach because Vatem is you. Shirtzu Ba'aretz, remember? Uvnei Yisrael Paru Vayishritzu. You couldn't find a better one. Especially, actually you couldn't find, I'll show you a better one in a minute. But this is even better than the better one I'm going to show you. You'll see what I mean in a minute. This is a better one because if the whole reason God wants the Jewish people is because of his commitment not to bring another flood, and if he can't start over again, he has to fix it. If the choice of the Jewish people is related to God's promise of the flood, which is the Haftorah from Parshat Noah, from Yeshayahu. Remember, Ki Bei Noach Zot Li? If that's our reason, it's a perfect place to remind ourselves of that. We're going to bring the proof at the introduction to the covenant between Noah and mankind, between God and Noah and mankind, called Brit Keshet. By putting this pasuk, I'm connecting Brit Keshet to Brit Milah, aren't I? If I'm saying it's our obligation, I'm connecting our obligation to have children, which makes sense now with Brit Milah, to Brit Keshet, because it's the same wording. Shem Elokim, it's the same format. Now, I want to show you now a better pasuk. Not a better one, but a better one. You'll see what I mean in a minute. The process of being chosen begins with Avraham Avinu and Brit Milah. Are all of Avraham's children chosen or not?
No.
Only Yitzchak. Remember, Ki Yitzchak Yikrei L'Chazara. Are all of Yitzchak's children chosen? We're going to read about it this week. It turns out it's only Yaakov. Okay. Yaakov is finally chosen. He's got to go through Lavan University. Remember? He's got his final exam with the day. But it's over. He comes back to Israel. He's a chosen son. He gets the name changed. Doesn't he? What's the meaning of the name change? Now that the filtering process is over, from here on we're all Jewish. Now, take a look at source F. It's on the next page. When Yaakov returns back to Israel, he goes back to Beit El, right where he made his promise to build a house for God. Remember, he makes his prayer, when I come back, I'll serve you, etc. God appears to him to make the name change official. Beforehand it was done by the Malach, remember in that little fight he had. Now, when he comes back to Israel, back to the place that's going to be God's house, to Beit El, God appears to him and wants to make it official. What's God tell him? God had appeared again, Elohim. Remember all the words, it's God's name Elohim, and Kel Shaddai, everything that came, we'll go back to Brit Milah in a minute. Elohim appeared to Yaakov and blessed him. He told him, Elohim Shimcha Yaakov, Likra Shimcha Yaakov, Kimiso Yashmecha, Likra Shmo Yisrael. He changed his name from Yaakov to Yisrael. Now it's official. Vayemer lo Elohim Ani Kel Shaddai. Remember that phrase? Pray or ve? No. Command form or not? Perfect? Goy gal goy mi mem mecha umalachim mecha letzecha yetzeo. Which is word for word Brit Milah. I think, no, I'm suggesting, I think that's a better one. But the one the rabbis pick is even better than the better one. You understand why that's a good one? Because that's a command to have children. But why is it now in command form and not just a blessing? Because now Yaakov is chosen and the filtering process is over with the name change to Yisrael. To review this, I want to go back now to source C. And we skipped the beginning of Brit Milah. I want to show you how thematic this is of the centrality of Brit Milah and the idea of being a Jewish nation. And God's name, his special name, Kel Shaddai. God has different names. I want to share with you something about God's names. I'm sure you're familiar that sometimes God speaks like Yud Kei Vav Kei, his special name. Sometimes Elohim. The Bible critics have a heyday with this. You know what they do, right? That's called the documentary hypothesis. They say, you know, it can't be that God creates with Elohim and then he creates again. It's got to be different sources. You follow the different traditions. I give you an analogy. God relationship with mankind happens on different levels, different perspectives. There's the God of nature, there's the God of history. And Chumash has to present God's relationship with mankind from different perspectives. In reality, it's everything together. But if you know anyone who studied medicine, anyone here a doctor? Bound to be a couple. Actually, in Boca Raton. Probably half of you. Now, when you studied anatomy, did you study the nervous system separately? The circulatory separately? The skeleton separately? The human body has different systems, doesn't it? You study each one as its own science, don't you? Because they work as a closed unit. But when you deal with the patient, what is he? He's all those together. But in order to understand the patient, I have to take each perspective by itself, study it separately, and then real life is a combination of them. And that's what's happening in Chumash. You appreciate it? You understand what I'm getting at? Chumash has to tell us God has a relationship with creation through nature. That's the 7 days of creation. God has this relationship through history. God is, remember the Rav Soloveitchik's famous work of Lonely Man of Faith? He uses that to explain Adam 1 and Adam 2. Now, what is man, Adam 1 or Adam 2? He's both. But first I have to explain what is Adam 1, what is Adam 2, to appreciate each one. And in my life, I'm a combination of them. But by separating each one to my separate component, then I can understand the complexity of life much better. And that's one of the reasons why Chumash writes, that's, I told you, it's a book to study, not to read. Chumash doesn't need to tell us how God created. We need to know why he created and our relationship with God. And Chumash does it by presenting multiple stories of creation to understand how God interacts with man and why God interacts with man. And what does that mean to our lives? It's not there to tell you what happens, it's there to tell you what life is about and what God is about. Now, in light of that, I want to go back now and take a quick look at Brit Milah, because here God introduces himself with a new name. On our mezuzah, we have that name, Shin Dalad Yud. That name is special to our forefathers. It begins, it's a sort of a version of Shem Elohim. Ramban, Nachmanides talks about it right here in chapter 17. It's a beautiful definition of what's special about it. But here, Hashem, who's been talking to Avram up until now, talks to Avram when he's 99 in verse 1 in Port C, chapter 17. God tells Avram Avinu, God tells him, you know, Vayi Avram was 99, and God appeared to him and tells him, Ani Kel Shaddai, Hitalech Lefanei V'yatamim. Ring a bell? What do we have those same words? Hitalech Lefanei V'yatamim? You see all the parallels between Noach and Avram Avinu? You catching on? Something, isn't the story of the flood is set up? Now, the rabbis, remember when Noach, Parshat Noach begins? Noach was a tzaddik. What's Rashi say on the spot? Oh, only not compared to Avram Avinu. Remember that one? And you say, what do they want from the poor guy? We finally have someone in Chumash called a tzaddik, and he's also no good. You follow? Leave him alone. But the rabbis understand Chumash is up to something. What's Chumash want you to do? It wants you to contrast Avram to Noach. It wants you to contrast Noach to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because you have to study the book, not read it. That's how Chumash teaches you the theme, but you have to study the book to appreciate what's going on. Now, Noach was chosen for what he was, Avram is chosen for what he needs to be. Noach was a one-time choice for the purpose of recreation. Avram is beginning a nation that has to be God's nation. And to be God's nation, we have to walk with God. We're a partnership with God. That's basically to represent God. You have to be straight and be God. Avram falls on his face, and who speaks to him now? Elohim. Pasuk Dalet. I'm going to make a covenant with you to be a mentor to other nations. This is a reward. You can have lots of nations. Av here means a mentor. Like, remember Yosef is a mentor to Paro? Av can mean a mentor. Like in the church, a father. I should hope he's not the father, because he's not supposed to get married, I think. But if he's a father, he's the mentor. The same thing in Hebrew. Sometimes it means father, sometimes it means the mentor. You're going to be a mentor to other nations. And then the name changed from Avram to Avraham. And then Pasuk Vav, Vifreiti Otcha. See the same phrase again? And I'll set you aside for the sake of nations. And you'll have leadership, you'll be sovereign, and you'll be a nation. Then I'll make my brit with you. And then I'm going to give you the land of Israel in order to become that nation. Okay? And then Pasuk Yeralef, Unumatem et Besar Lotchem, Vayelot Brit, Ben Yom Benichem. The same phrases. We have a brit, an oath brit, Shem Elokim, Ben Yom Ben. Brit Milah, Brit Keshet, you follow the similarities? There'll be one more brit with the exact same words. Now go back to source C. Go flip the page back to the beginning. Brit Sinai is a continuation of... Brit Sinai is a continuation of...
Exodus.
It's after the Exodus. If you remember Parsha Vayera, it's all there, but... Remember Vayera, Perta Avram, Be'el Shaddai, but not Yud Kevat, that's complicated. Remember? That's Brit Milah. That's called Brit. That's Brit Ben Aptarim. That's too complicated. In case, for those who remember, when we came out of Egypt, both were coming true. God has to fulfill both the God of history and the God of nature. And then we're ready for the fourth cup. Remember, that's the fourth cup. That's our Sinai. Then they beat it. Then you're going to get to the land. It's all set up there in Shmuel. Now, we get the Torah, and in Sefer Vayikra at the end, we have, after all the laws are over, in Parshat Bahar, we have all these special laws at Har Sinai, followed by, what will happen if you keep my laws? What will happen if you don't keep my laws? What do we call that? Tokacha. And it begins, remember, in Bukotai Telecho? Telecho, Yitalech, got it? If you follow my laws, God will bless you, I'll help you help him. And then we have the conclusion, Pasuk Tet, see there, in Source B, Ufaniti alechem, vifreiti etchem, vibeti etchem, vakimoti et briti etchem. Perfect match? See, on source B, on the first page. It's from Har Sinai. Okay. Ufaniti alechem again, vifreiti etchem, vibeti etchem, vakimoti et briti etchem. See all the same phrases? Which shows you Brit Sinai is simply a continuation of the same Brit. Vitalachi v'tochem v'iti lechem l'alohim v'atem t'yudi la'am. Isn't that exactly Brit Milah? What's the difference? Brit Milah is at the seed level. We begin the nation there, like when you see a tree. It began, now it's a tree, it began with the seed. The Jewish people, like a tree now, but it began with the seed. With Abram, and it was refined until we get to Yaakov. We planted. Yechezkel has a beautiful analogy. That when we have the seed, it's like a test tube baby. We plant the womb, it's Egypt. And we become a nation in Egypt. We leave Egypt, the water breaks. Remember? Remember at the Seder, what did God find us? We're an abandoned baby that God takes care of and born and takes care of us. Yechezkel uses that analogy and you quoted it at the Seder without appreciating how awesome it is. Now, what do we see? The Brit Sinai now, it's official because now we're a nation. Because God wants a nation to serve him. It began with the seed. Now we're a bona fide nation. If that's the case, Brit Sinai should also have an oath brit. It's the same words. Shem Elokim, Ben Yubayn. What else is there? Prorvu. Everything's there. What is going to be the oath brit of Brit Sinai? Where'd you get that from? Are you guessing or you knew that before?
No, I wasn't guessing.
Well, we sang it on Shabbos. Remember our beautiful lady wrote a beautiful song? It's hard to forget. Yom Shabbaton. English Torah, right? Remembering Shabbat is like what? Zichro is like what? What Reiach Nicholach? The one that God smelled when he promised not to bring another flood? It's got to be, because Yonah Matzah Bamanoch. Basham Yanuch, you got it?
Yeah.
Make sense now? What's the last line? Ha'am asher na ketzon ta'a. The nation that's wandering like lost sheep. By the way, it's a taf, not a tet. Most benchers have it wrong. Ketzon ta'a, it's wandering sheep, not a mistaken sheep. It's a taf, not a tet. Half the benchers have it wrong. It's just, I shouldn't mention that. Ha'am asher na ketzon ta'a. Yizkor l'tolto b'ritu shvo. Now remember, the nation's wandering. We're in exile, right? Rabbi Yehuda Levi, in Spain. We're wandering. We're asking God with a prayer, remember to bring them back based on the brit and shvo you made with us. These calls about the brit and shvo. Levi yavot l'vit, so nothing bad should happen to them. Kasher nishvata, amei Noah. That was Haftarah. Well, what did God promise? Just like my brit with Noah is forever, my brit with you is forever. And don't leave us in exile, bring us back one day. So it took a couple of thousand years, now we're back. But it's such a beautiful zemer, isn't it? No. But Shabbat is the old brit. That's our weekly reminder that we're God's people. No. And this is the brit that we have at Har Sinai. Does it come with a contract? Is there a contract at Har Sinai? We make a covenant. It's called Brit Sinai, isn't it? Who knows two? We sing at the Seder. Shnei Luchot HaBrit. What's written on them? Aser Tadvarim, which begins with, I'm your boss, and that's why I took you out of Egypt. You can't work for anybody else. That's every contract, the two sides. You're chosen to make my name great, therefore don't you dare mess up. Understand? You're carrying my name, don't do it in vain. You see, don't do a lousy job, but don't do a chilul Hashem. How does Shabbos get in there? Remember Shabbos? Oh, Zachor, Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Why is Shabbat part of the, it's not just a commandment, it's covenantal, isn't it? Shabbat is part of the covenant. It says so, isn't it? That's why it's in the Ten Commandments, because it's a reminder that we're God's people. But it's covenantal. Therefore, if you desecrate the Sabbath day, if the Sabbath day is a reminder of our covenant, and you desecrate the day, what's the consequence of that action? If Shabbat is our weekly reminder, our Ot Brit, and you desecrate the day, you don't respect it, it's as though you're saying what? I don't identify with the brit. And therefore, you've cut yourself off from the brit. What's your punishment? Right. Your consequence. Called Karin. I'll read it. It's in the Bible. I'll read it in a minute. Yeah. Now, we also have to have Jewish continuity. We have to teach our children. We have to teach respect. What commandment is that? Yeah. Honoring parents. Yeah. You understand how it's a contract? The second half is about good behavior. It's about being a yurt, about to kill, steal, everything that's in every movie. Killing, stealing, adultery, and lying. Isn't it? Because that's mankind. But we're God's special people. What do we? For sure we can't do that. Because we're God's special people, we can't even think about it. What commandment is that? Remember Lo Tachmod? Lo Tachmod, that's the line of the Ten Commandments, in my opinion. Because we're God's people, he holds us to a higher standard. For all mankind, you can't kill, steal, adult. But God's people, don't even think about it, because it's preventive medicine. Now, how do we get to, I'm sorry, the Ten Commandments is the brit. It's a contract. What's the reminder of the contract? Shabbat. Now take a look. Oh, it's perfect. Look in source E. Source D, we did see brit milah. Source C is brit Sinai, which I'm assuming you remember. I should have read that, but that, I based the whole shir on source D. That at Har Sinai, we took upon ourselves to be God's people forever. Okay. And look at source E. After 6 chapters about the Mishkan, Truma Tetzaveh Kitisa, probably even more. Chapter 25 to 31 is all about the Mishkan. How to build it, the whole thing, putting it together. You remember, don't you? Truma Tetzaveh half of Kitisa. It says, Vasita, Vasita, do this, this, and that. The Mishkan's over. What's the last thing God says? Oh, by the way, it's very important to build a Mishkan. And like Ramban explains, the Mishkan is a reminder of Har Sinai in the physical sense. It's like the little shul. I mean, it's a big shul. This is a little Mikdash. But it's a reminder of Har Sinai because there's Luchot HaBrit. Remember, there's Torah. All the imagery of the Shul is from the Mikdash, and the Mikdash is a mini Har Sinai. So even though it's so important, it doesn't override Shabbat. What does God say? Daber b'nei Yisrael, demor achai shavtai tishmoru. Shabbat, why? Ki oti, look at the wording, b'nei u'b'nei echem, b'dorot echem. It's a reminder between me and you. Is that the wording? Like we have by Brit Keshe, Brit Milah? You see the pattern? Let that to know the what? What's that mean? But then Tilim Alecha Koni Vukha Kadosh. The next line I skipped is the law of Karet. Capital punishment for Shabbat and Karet, which makes sense now. And then, the line we say in Kiddush, Am Yisrael was commanded to keep Shabbat for all generations. It's a reminder, not that God created, it's a reminder that we're chosen to serve Him. But our reminder, just like God made one day special to elevate the entire week, God made one nation special to elevate mankind. You understand what happens with Kedusha? God separates one item from a bigger group, elevates it for the sake of the group it was taken from. When you keep Shabbat, that doesn't downgrade the rest of the week, that upgrades the rest of the week. When I make one day special, that brings God into... I separate one day from the week, elevate it, and that brings God into every day of the week. When God picks one nation special, we separate, they're separated, not separate, separated, elevated, but they become the funnel to bring God to mankind. That's Kedusha in a nutshell. It's always, I'm separating something from a larger group, bringing it closer to God for the sake of the group I was taken from. Okay, our time is just about up. I think it's up. Do you have 2 more minutes? Okay,
yes.
Nothing else to do, and it's raining. Now, on the last page, I hope it's clear what we did. I tried to show you why logically it makes sense, based on Har Sinai and our commitment to be God's people forever and the biggest theme of Chumash, that we're chosen to be His people. Logically, it makes sense that you have to have children. Not because it's a blessing, because we're committed to be God's people forever. We're part of a chain of history. It's part of being Jewish. Therefore, you have to have children, you have to educate them. Is there a commandment to educate your children and teach them Torah? In fact, what verse did the Bible, did the rabbis learn our obligation to learn Torah from? B'shinatam levanecha. Torah learning is transgenerational. There's a whole Seder about it, isn't there? Don't you notice how central that is, education is, bringing up the next generation? We spend more on our next generation than ourselves often. Now, so we brought that, and I tried to show you that there's a logical reason, implicit from Har Sinai, that we have to have children. And now the rabbis need a pasuk. I try to explain to you why that's such a great pick. You follow? Because it's written different than the others. It's extra, it's superfluous. It's got shirtsu. And it's connecting between Brit Milah and Brit Keshet. Because you follow? From so many angles, it's such a great pasuk. And that's how the rabbis study the Bible. You follow? They're onto something. They just give you the bottom line. When you study Chumash, you see how deep their statements are. That's what I wanted to show you. Now, I want to bring you another example, which is a lot of fun, of something that makes sense. And it's a commandment because it makes sense. And now I need a pasuk. Got it? Like I mentioned tefillah before?
Yeah.
So look under the last source, source G. Who remembers this law in Sefer Dvarim? God says, remember what God did to Miriam. Remember that one? Now the whole pasuk is, God says, be careful. Source G on the last page. The commandment, does every commandment need a pasuk? So in Sefer Dvarim, in Perek Habdalad, it says, be careful of the laws of leprosy. To keep listening to everything the Kohanim tell you. And we get the last line of, remember what God did to Miriam. What did God do to Miriam? The whole, you know the story. I like to ask my students, why does God tell us Lashon Hara about Miriam? Chumash is telling you, what do we need to know for? Why do we need to know? So that we won't speak Lashon Hara. And this is what Rabban says. Most commentators say, that's good advice. Like when you go to the dentist, remember to brush your teeth. Remember last. You gotta get that every. You got. Remember in arguments, you gotta get that last line in. And it usually goes on for a couple. You know what I mean? The Brogus game. You gotta get the last line in. Now, Chumash. Most people understand it. That Moshe's gotta get the last line. Remember God did to Miriam, therefore keep the laws. But it's not a commandment, but rather just good advice. Ramban says no. Somebody says remember. We got it to Miriam. Lefi dati, she mitzvah tasim mamash. What's that mean? This is not just good advice, but rather, this is a positive commandment. And the Ramban likes to argue with Rambam about what's a commandment, what's not a commandment. Now, they all get to 613, but they argue over about, 10, it's about 20 different ones they argue over. And here Ramban says, this should be counted and something else shouldn't be counted. But this counts as a commandment. What's a commandment? To remember what God did to Miriam. That's a strange commandment, isn't it? We have to remember what God did to Miriam. So he says like this. He goes, first it has to be a commandment, because every other zachor is a commandment. Remember what God did to Amalek? Remember Shabbat? Remember you came out of Egypt? Remember? So it's got to be a commandment, because all the other zachors are. this list. It says, Kula mitzvah, im ken gam ze kmotam. Those are commandments, this has to be. And what is it? It's a warning, he has a ra, mila deber lashon hara. It's a positive commandment to remember not to speak lashon hara. It's not only forbidden to speak lashon hara, it's a positive commandment to remember not to. You got it? It's, again, preventive medicine. No. He says like this. We have to remember what God did to Miriam, and that will motivate us not to speak Lashon Hara. That's like if you had your first car accident. You remember that, and that's going to, you'll drive careful next time. You follow? Yeah. Remember something that happened, and you learn. That's how we learn. Now, Mikan Nireh, Shir Rabbatim, Yasoto Mitzvah, Vodos Sipor, Itzah Bevat, Nitzah Min Hanagayim. From here it says this is really a commandment, not just a good advice. Now here comes a big line, italicized. He brings a great proof, it has to be a commandment. Listen to his proof. You know the proof that Yaakov wore a hat? Yaakov Avinu. How do we know Yaakov Avinu wore a hat? It could be Be'er Sheva. Right? How could he go without a hat? Remember, you know that one? It's a famous one. No. He does something almost the same thing here. He goes, Ve'ech yitachein, how could it be that it's not a commandment? Because Ve'ech yitachein, Shalosh and Hara, Shu Shakok Shvichut Damin. Shalosh and Hara is his banished Shvichut Damin. He says, how can it not be a commandment? It's so important not to speak Lashon Hara. How can it not be a commandment to remember not to speak it? And therefore, it's got to be. Now what? Now go find me a pasuk. Understand what Ramban's doing? I'm showing you. What?
He counts the mitzvah as two or one?
It's a mitzvah, it's one commandment not to speak Lashon Hara. To remember not to speak Lashon Hara. That's why some people say it every day at the end of davening. This, what, we remember all the Zohar, some have it in the back of their sitter. It's a positive commandment to remember not to speak Lashon Hara. Yes, and how can it not be? Olav Abba Michal said, okay? Abba Ketubba, Azarag Dola, Limanam Mimeno, Bukule, and it's one of the 613, and everyone else forgot to count it. But you follow, you understand why I brought that Ramban in? I want to show you, there's many examples. We did with Tefillah, we did here, and now. There's some commandments that make sense. Now, and not because there's a pasuk says so, even without the pasuk, but every law has to have a pasuk, you follow? Now, I go find what's called an asma, I have to attach it to a pasuk, which also makes sense, you follow? But the reason is not the pasuk, the reason is the concept. And now I need to attach it to a pasuk. Okay? And that's why the rabbis say pur vu, it's a commandment for us, not because it says pur vu. Like, you remember you said 70% of you? How could it be? It's got to be for mankind. For mankind, it's a blessing, because it says it's a blessing. Like, it's just like the fish, it's instinct. We have to thank God for nature. For the Jewish people, we're commanded, because that's the essence of our connection to God. We're responsible not just for ourselves, for all generations. And that becomes half of Judaism. And of course it's a commandment. Not because it says it, but because it is it. That's what it is. And the pasuk the rabbis bring, when you see all the different directions it's coming from, the word shitsu, it's superfluous. The connection between Brit Milah and Brit Keshet, and everything we brought, shows you how beautiful the reading of the Bible is. And sometimes the rabbis say something that sounds like, what are they talking about? When you look in depth, it's the right on the mark. Okay. Thank you, Rabbi. Save on for questions, but well, here's our break. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you ever come across, because it's my own idea, but I don't know if you ever come across, that Sora died the